I'm not Jewish. I was raised in a city known for racism, a place called Vidor, Texas. I think it's still all white. They used to burn 60-foot crosses on the side of Interstate 10 twice a year. 300 or 400 guys, 300 or 400 cowards hiding behind sheets. I went to school with their kids, and I just knew these people were so ignorant, I didn't want to have anything to do with them. My family, actually, I'm proud to say my grandpa, he fought the Klan. I can remember him getting my uncles out of high school one time and handing them shotguns and saying, "We're going to war today." Because the Klan wanted to tell him who he could and couldn't hire in his home building business. Anyway, so I grew up there, you know, and had sort of a sensitivity to this issue. Because I called them cluckers. Cluck, 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 cluck. Because they'd never fight you one-on-one. It was always, anyway. So I grew up with these people wondering, you know, what is the wrong with these? Anyway, I got out of there as soon as I could. 20 years old, I moved to Dallas. I had made the decision to become an atheist at the age of 15. And there was a convenient religion if you want to play in a rock and roll band, by the way. And by 17, I was playing six nights a week at the Foxy Lady Bar in Beaumont, Texas. Six nights a week for 3 years. Did anybody ever see me there? Oh, come on. You just don't want to admit it. Anyway. That's right. Yeah, that's true. It was just actually just wiped out by a flood that was worse than the hurricane. Yeah, everybody in my family lost their houses in the hurricane. And just as they get fixed, this flood happens about 2 months ago that was worse. Anyway, luckily I moved to Asheville, North Carolina. We're up in the mountains. We don't have to worry about floods. So anyway, I was 29 years old, and when I got into an argument with a guy, I don't know how he even drew me into this argument, but he told me the Sabbath was on Saturday, and I went, you know, come on, even an atheist knows it's on Sunday. What is wrong with you? And anyway, I got into an argument with the guy, and it just made me decide I was going to prove that guy was wrong. And so I started reading the Bible to prove that he was wrong and to prove that the Bible was wrong. I guess you see how that worked out. So I studied the Bible for 4 months very, very obsessively. I wanted so bad to prove it was wrong. I think that was actually a really good thing, because at the end of 4 months, I knew the Bible better than most Christians. Really sad. But I was driving home from a gig one night, thinking about what I'd read in Jeremiah that day about where God says, "When you seek me with your whole heart, you'll find me." And I think maybe I had sought him with half a heart before. I don't know. But that night in the car, I just looked up in the sky and I said, "Okay, God, if you're really there and you could hear me, I'd follow you. But I feel like I'm just talking to the air, and I don't know that you can hear me, and you're going to have to prove it." Have you ever shaken your finger at God? Oh, yeah. You have? Wow, not many people admit that. But it doesn't scare him. He wasn't intimidated in the least. Next thing I know, I'm shaking with my hand while I'm trying to drive. You know, 15 years of the rock and roll lifestyle, that had never happened. And my next words were, "Okay, God, maybe not so much at once." And I stopped shaking. And when I got home, I opened up the New Testament to know him. It's really funny how much easier it is to read when you want to know him instead of you trying to prove him wrong. And so I just started consuming. I think I read the New Testament scriptures four times in the month of January 1990. I'm sorry, 19. It was 1990, yeah. Anyway, there were two things I noticed. One, Jesus was nothing like what I thought he was. Nothing like what I thought he was. And I submit to you that anyone who doesn't love him has never met him. And they don't know that. I did not want to love Jesus. This was going to mess up my rock band. But when I met him, I couldn't help it. And I really believe that, you know, if you're in this room today and you don't love him, you've never met the real one. And it's really just our job to introduce him. He can take it from there. But the other thing I noticed as I read the New Testament was that all these people are Jews. They don't tell you that in Vidor, Texas. I mean, I thought Peter was the Pope and Mary was a Catholic and Paul was a Pentecostal and John was a Baptist. They were all Jewish. So I remember saying to God, God, I got you, you got me. Why do we need them? Why do I have to go to church? And anyway, I knew I needed to. So I just started calling churches randomly out of the Yellow Pages and asking them, you know, do you have a lot of Jewish people there? Yeah. Yeah. No, I was in Dallas by this time. But I'm happy to say that every church I called had at least one Jewish person there. Every church I called. But none of them had very many. And then when I'd ask them, well, what happened? Their answers sometimes contradicted each other. So I just, well, they don't really know, you know. So finally, I even called one synagogue, asked if they believed in Jesus. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. They didn't even, they click. So anyway, I finally, one pastor told me about a place called Baruch Hashem, which means bless the name, in Dallas, Texas. And so this was the very first place I visited as a new believer. My rock band had just been nominated best rock band in Dallas. I had written the theme song for the 1988 Texas Rangers baseball team, and things were going great for me. But I walked in there with a T-shirt and blue jeans with holes in the knees on purpose, just to see if I would get the same kind of judgment I'd gotten when I lived in Vidor. And when Rabbi Marty said, would you greet your neighbor? These people loved me. And that's how I became Messianic. They will know him by your love one for another. And in this place, I just felt the love. I knew it was real. And there was no hypocrisy in the way that they treated me. And I just, that was it. Well, that and Oneg. That's why I'm Messianic, Oneg. So anyway, I, you don't know what Oneg is? Oh, okay. Oneg is when you have like pastries and food after it. And bagels, right. Pastries, food, bagels. Yeah, Oneg is like the time afterwards where we'd always gather and have a meal. And I remember going to services and, you know, services were over. We'd stay and have a meal and dance till like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Then we'd say, well, now we need supper. And we'd go shut down some restaurant somewhere. They'd be running us out at 11. Y'all got to go. We just, I just enjoyed, you know, meeting the saints and getting to be part of this kingdom. And, you know, every culture has in it, has a sacrifice for sin. For every culture has this concept of, an innocent paying the price for your guilt. You know, even Satanists have baby sacrifices, right? Everybody has this concept of a sacrifice, but how is that going to work? How does the killing a sheep take care of my sins? God knew that it had to be done on the inside. And so God provided himself a sacrifice. And it's not like any other sacrifice in that, you know, you don't actually have to pay for it. He pays for it. It's just a matter of receiving it. And this is a message that really the Jewish people brought to the world. And it's, to me, it's just a very sad thing that so many of them don't know it. So anyway, this is why I really feel like Romans 11, verses 12 through 15, Paul lays out the way for a worldwide revival. And he says, speaking of the Jewish people, if their casting away means blessing for you Gentiles, then how much more will their reconciliation be but life from the dead? And he's talking about for the whole world. So I believe in that one little verse is wrapped up the secret of the ages on how we can see a worldwide revival. So I present the good news in a Jewish way so Jewish people can understand it and somehow just trust God that that is going to work its way towards a worldwide revival. And we've just seen some really amazing things since 1990. Jewish people are are coming to faith. In Israel, it's interesting. They tell me in Tel Aviv, every week they have a new believer now. And that's, they used to be years before they'd see one new believer. So something's going on in this world with the Jewish people and God. He's calling them back, and they're hearing it. And the biggest part of that, I think, is people like you who care about that. So thank you very much. Now I'm going to shut up. We're going to blow the shofar. The shofar is the second oldest instrument known to man after the drum. It's made out of a ram's horn. It was used in ancient Israel for calling people into an assembly. It was used also for directing the battle in war. Different tones told the troops which way to go. And we are in a battle in America today, don't you think so? A little bit of a battle. So the enemy really hates this sound. So we're going to start by blowing this trumpet and punch him in the nose. Can I get some more of that, please? Hallelujah! Can I get some more, please? Oh, wait. Oh, wait.
Oh, the time goes by so fast. It goes by so fast.
So last time I was here, I talked a little bit about the March of the Nations, where I'd met General Daron Omog. General Daron Omog at the time, well, for many years, was the highest decorated military officer in Israel. And General Omog had a son who was profoundly autistic. And he went to go find help for his son. And so he was one of our speakers at March of the Nations for Israel's birthday. And he said something that's going to stick with me forever. He said, as the general of Israel's armies, I would never leave a man behind. But we as a society are leaving these children behind. He says, they don't even know how to sin. They've done nothing wrong. And God will judge us by how we treat the least of these in our society. And I thought, I've heard that before somewhere. So basically, I resigned as director of March of Remembrance and putting all the marches together. The Germans can handle it. They're meticulous. And I started something called Servant Tours. We did our first one last year. But basically, it's for people who have been to Israel many times. If you've never been, I don't recommend it, okay? But if you've gone several times, I used to always hear from people, oh, I wish there was some way we could get connected to the people, you know? We want to be connected to what Jesus is doing today in the land. So I started these things called servant tours. And basically what it is we go and serve. Wow. What a concept. So we go to this city. I'm sorry, I skipped that part. General Omog built a city for the profoundly autistic in Israel. They had their entire city. It's beautiful. It's out in the Negev, in the desert, kind of close to Beersheba. It's built around a hospital, but then it has such good facilities. It's actually where soldiers also come that are severely disabled, because all the facilities are in this city. The city has extra wide doors. Everything is extra wide. It has walk-in showers. The citizens of this city live two in an apartment with a volunteer who's teaching them how to cook, how to make food, how to get by. What's beautiful is not only that they're taking such good care, but they're helping people understand. There's a school in this city, and all the cities around, all the kids from those cities come to this school. So there's only 20 kids in that school from the city. But then all the kids from around the city, from the other cities around, come in. It's about 150 kids. And those kids are learning about the special challenges of autism, you know, those kids that are coming in. Anyway, it's just beautiful. They have a, like, they got their own bowling alley. They've got their own theater, you know, extra wide aisles. So you get it. They got their own swimming pool, you know. I have a friend of mine. She has an autistic child, and she brought her daughter to a swimming pool once, and they made her get out because she wears a diaper, you know. So she's never been in a swimming pool, you know. I mean, that's terrible. They did nothing wrong, right? So anyways, I talked about this last time I was here, and shortly after I left here, I met a woman in Florida who had bought a lot of property around Gainesville, and I told her this story, and she said, this is what the property is for. So she went to Israel, and the general gave her a tour around their city and told her that he pledged the help of Israel to build a city like it in the United States. And so in what we found out as we began doing our research that I don't know if every state, but I know Florida has a mandated budget in their HUD budget, Housing and Urban Development, for disabled people. So we just found a grant writer and went to the state of Florida and said, we want this money to build a city. And it's being done. Now, we're not building it yet. The grant's still being approved, but we're sure we're going to get approved for it. It's long paperwork. But we really would love to see these kinds of cities all over America. We don't really have an answer for autism here in America, do we? And this comprehensive answer that Israel has come up with is it's unbelievable. Now, if you go to Israel, no matter where you're at, you're going to see soldiers standing around with a little green cup, and they're collecting money for the city. And they've really got the entire nation involved. In fact, they've started actually drafting. There's certain types of autism that make that perfect for reading radar. I forget exactly what it is, but they're actually seeking autistic kids for certain positions in the Army now. And anyways, he's elevated these kids from, you know, something we have to hide over here to something we're very proud of in our society. And we'd just love to see that come to America. So we're doing these servant tours to raise awareness. Our next one's going in February if you want to go with us. We'll go to the city and we'll serve for 3 days there. We don't actually work with the kids. We built a rock garden for them last time. Around their school, we built a rock garden. The ladies planted flowers, and it was beautiful. And then we go around the country, and we'll spend like half a day doing some sort of ministry. Like we picked up trash in Tiberias. we held a banquet for Holocaust survivors, things like that. And then there's plenty of time to do tourism around that. So we do tourism. It's actually very meaningful, but we decided it would be better to go and show Israel how we love them, you know, by getting our hands dirty. So who knows if it's going to work. We're just doing it and trusting that God will make the increase. If there's something you want to do, great. We'd love to have you with us. If for some reason you could never go or maybe would like to go today, I have been filming for the last 5 years a virtual reality tour of Israel. Most of you don't know what that is. In fact, I'll say all of you don't. I'm really ahead of my time. I am. I mean, this is 5 years from now, this is what I'll be famous for. No one's going to remember I was a singer. Because I'm going to bring more people to Israel than Moses with this virtual reality tour. If you have one of these headsets and you went online and you did a search for Israel today, 90% or more of what you're going to find is from me. So I'm already sort of controlling the narrative, and what I do is I get Jewish archaeologists. They were all, every single one of them were Orthodox Jews, bringing you to the places where Jesus was and explaining to you in the archaeology and the history. And you can see even in these Orthodox men, their high regard for the person of Yeshua, you know. But I wanted it this way because I wanted Christians to hear how the Jewish people see it. And I didn't want it colored with religion. You know what I mean? Just the facts. People can make up their own mind. And so I've been to, like I said, I would film for 2 weeks, 5 years in a row. So any place that any tour goes to, I've got it. And you put on those glasses and choose the program. I've literally got hundreds of programs. They're generally about 4 to 5 minutes long, where you can go to Capernaum and look around as your archaeologist is telling you what you're looking at. It's just like you're standing there. So the first thing people do is they look at their feet because they can't believe they're not there. That's where I put the commercial. But I'm not selling the headset, okay? The VR headset you can get yourself, but I make the films that are free because I want everyone to see Israel through the eyes of the Jewish people. And so any place you can name in Israel that you want to see, I've got it. And then after that, I've also got a program I call Show Stories. We gathered 12 Messianic rabbis who are the children of Holocaust survivors. Most of them even knew each other, but they'd never talked about their experience as the children of the Holocaust survivors. We just got them in a room, had them tell their story, and then they had a conversation. But that seemed a little too bland for me, so I brought in 4 children of Nazis to share in the conversation. So it's really compelling conversation. It's on my app. I built an app. If you have a VR headset and you can access it, you get to see all that. I also have a music channel with a lot of music from Israel. Anyways, I want to bring Israel to everybody. And I did this all with my own nickel, and it's killing me. But if you want to donate, that'd be great. But I wanted it to be free because I want everyone to see the truth. I think once people see the truth, God can take it from there. So anyways, I have a headset over there, and I'd love to show, if that sounds interesting to you, I'd love to show you what it looks like. I'm going to do one last song, and I sure appreciate you guys having me again today. And thank you so much, Fred, for being a witness in the city of Baltimore on Kristallnacht. Thank you so much. God bless you, brother. I put together a lot of those marches, and let me tell you how it starts. It starts off, you're enthusiastic, I'm going to do a good thing. And then as the day gets there, you're thinking, oh, nobody's going to show up. And then the day of it, you're just so, oh, no, it's going to be horrible. And you get there, and you're surprised because there are a lot of people who really mean something, too. So thank you so much for the courage it takes to do that.